Hello, everybody, and welcome to the fifth. I think it's the fifth. Yeah, that's what it says here on my piece of paper. Big Planet Podcast number five. We got me and Nick here, and Peter's joining us this week.
Hello.
Hello,
good
Peter.
To be here. Yeah, Peter wanted to come because he said, what was it that our last podcast was the worst one so far?
I didn't think it was the worst one. I just had the slowest start out of all of them. I thought you should start with a lot more energy than last one.
We did talk about the Silver Surfer cartoon for a long time. I think the main problem was the first time we tried to record it, we started off with Gene Colan's death.
Yeah, that brought everything way down.
It's definitely a downer. Yeah.
It definitely put a damper on things. But Peter's also here because Peter has a bit of insider knowledge this week. He went to the DC Comics Retailer Roadshow up in Baltimore, where Jim Lee and Dan Didio were there talking about the 52 new books. Why don't you enlighten us?
It was great. About 2 weeks ago, we went up to Baltimore, and there was about five or six guys from DC Comics, including Jim Lee and Jeff Johns, and they were telling how great the new 52 books are going to be. They were really excited about them.
I'm sure they were telling you they were great.
Well, yeah, it's kind of their job to tell us how great, but you know, this is complete. This is like, they're for this 100%. There's no going back. There's no changing numbering back. They said all the guys up there, you know, when Action Comics hits issue 1,000, they're not changing it back or anything like that.
I don't believe it.
Even Dan DiDio said, you know, when they told me they were changing all the numbering to number one, we're not changing Detective or Action. And they're like, no, we're going to have to. And they're like, no, you can't. So, you know, they felt the same thing. You know, they were shocked and surprised by this, but they're behind this 200%. And honestly, the best thing they said was, you know, if this doesn't work and everybody doesn't love these books, a lot of guys up there are going to get fired. So they know their jobs are riding on this. And the other thing they said, which was great, was that they've been working on this for 4 or 5 months now. And they've given the scripts out ahead of time. They got them in early. They got the art in early. And they made people redraw stuff. Hey, if your artwork wasn't up to speed, if you weren't doing dynamic, action-oriented stuff, or your script kind of dogged in a little bit, they give it back to you and made them redo it.
That's interesting. I think one of the main things that people have been saying is, yeah, of course, when Action goes to 1,000, they're going to change the numbering back. So it's pretty it's interesting that they actually came out and said, no, that's not going to happen. So I guess, you know, mostly we've just seen previews of the books and little blurbs about them. But did you actually get to see some pages and some of what the stories are going to be or anything like that?
No, we didn't get to see any artwork. It wasn't ready yet. There's a sampler coming out in 2 weeks. That's going to be great. They'll have it at San Diego Con, and they're going to have it to all the stores. And just the idea that they're, you know, they care about the artwork so much and the story so much, they're making people go back and do it again, I think is unheard of. Even they said, you know, hey, their books lately have been weak. One of the reasons is they're so behind schedule and they're trying to rush them out. As soon as the writer artist gets it in, they're like, no time for editing, just get it out the door. And it hurts. You can see in their work that it isn't always the strongest. They're really trying to get all these guys to do their best work of their careers, maybe the best work in their life. And they know if they can't get you with issue one, you're not coming back for issue two and three. They know everything's riding on this, and they want this to be the best thing they've ever done.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to check out these books on issue one. I mean, a lot of people don't even read DC books right now. I know I'm definitely more excited about this stuff coming out in September than I am about the stuff now, especially because right now a lot of the stories feel rushed and maybe don't feel like they matter that much since everything's going to restart in September.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, let's wrap this up. Let's get this done with, and let's move on to the next thing. But I am excited about the new stuff, but I guess we'll just see. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm a little skeptical, but
I think some of the books were going to wrap up anyway, and some of them, it's not that they seem rushed, it's just we're losing interest fast. Yeah. I mean, we're gaining interest more and more every week in the newer stuff, and it's like, well, if all this is ending, why am I reading it? Which is definitely a downside for DC, and it's definitely going to upset a few people.
But the good thing is, I guess that's, you know, it's very temporary.
Yes, exactly. That's what they're saying is, you know, issue one or two are as good as they're saying for all these series. No one's going to remember the earlier stuff.
I mean, nobody's going to remember JSA number 51 or whatever.
On the flip side.
Or nobody's going to remember JSA at all.
Because they're not around. But if on the flip side, if the first couple issues are not very good, then people are going to be like, oh, I wish it would go back, which is the bad part of it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing is if these books aren't as good as they want us to think they're going to be. And you got to wonder about some of the writers and artists on some of these books. They're not necessarily top tier. They're some of the guys who can meet the deadlines and have time to dedicate to this. They're not the number one and two people in the industry for the writers and artists.
This new thing will you know, give them, energize them. They're like, you can pretty much do whatever you want, and hopefully this will get them to, you know, take charge and do something interesting and different.
Well, and they've got top tier guys. I mean, Geoff Johns is going to be writing Green Lantern, Justice League, and Aquaman. I almost called it Emperor Aquaman. And Grant Morrison's going to be writing Superman. And I'm assuming, you know, when Batman Leviathan or Batman Incorporated Leviathan starts in, I think, November, I mean, that'll be Grant Morrison as well.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
I mean, there are definitely good guys working on it, but there's also some mediocre guys. But the cool thing is that Jim Lee is the art director for the whole 52 relaunch. So he went through every page of art that came in and made change or asked the guys to make changes.
Now, you don't think that, like, I know he redesigned like 50 different costumes. Do you think that makes things homogenous a little bit?
I don't think it makes things homogenous. I'm not sure that all the designs are the best designs I've ever seen in my life.
Harley Quinn.
Or the Batwing, which, you know, in the College Park store we have, you know, that could be a real popular title, but that costume, man, that's pretty weak.
And, well, and the most of the Teen Titans costumes aren't very good either, especially Red Robin as Falcon from the 70s.
But we've only seen one page. We've only seen a splash page, so we'll see. You know, I'm really looking forward to this sample book. I'm really excited about the sample book.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about that. I want to see more art from these books. And, yeah, I'm super excited about the new stuff coming out. So you don't have to tell me. I just think DC Comics aren't very good right now, which I know you disagree with, Peter.
I do. I think there's a lot of weak books, but I think overall there's some real strong books. And even the books aren't the strongest. They're trying a lot of new things. They're really going out and trying different things. I like Marvel books. I think they're pretty good. But even when I like them a lot, like a lot of the X-Men books that I've been enjoying, I feel like I've read the story before. I don't think it's terribly original.
I don't know. I think they're trying some pretty new things. I mean, for example, like Venom, I mean, it's something like people are, you know, usually think of Venom as some monster who like goes around killing people, and they're like, let's do something completely different. Let's make him a hero and make him not be a monster and just kind of
But how many times has Marvel taken the villain and turned him into a hero? That's something they do all the time. I mean, it's good. I've been enjoying it. It's a good direction to go, but it's not the house of ideas.
All right, so yeah, it seems like all of our opinions differ, but I think we're all pretty excited about this relaunch, too. So.
I do. I think, and the other thing I want to say is that, you know, I mean, sales are down for Marvel and DC and comic stores, and we need something to get people interested, and that's why DC is doing this. They're trying to get people who have stopped reading to start reading again, and Marvel's plan to get people back to reading again is to kill a bunch of characters and try to make the, you know, the major media, USA Today, about it.
Well, have you been reading the Flashpoint books? I mean, I think a character dies in every single issue.
Yeah. Also, Marvel has been trying the, you know, they have the point one thing where for each title, they're trying to have a, you know, a jumping on point for new readers, which is pretty good. I mean, it's a way for them to get new readers without actually having to change their entire history, you know. They're like, here's a new storyline. Here's where you get in. Just read this issue and you'll be good to go.
I think it's good. No, I think that's a great idea. And there are some entry points, and especially like Mighty Thor, I think is great.
Yeah.
And
they put out a lot of those saga books that they give out for free. They're really good. They, you know, like Thor Saga is basically like the entire history of Thor in one book.
Well, the only problem with those saga books though, is like you look at like say Punisher Saga, and it's like, oh, maybe I didn't want to know all these things about Punisher.
Yeah, true.
Punisher turned into an angel that was killing demons, and then he turned into Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I thought it was awesome when he turned into Frankenstein. I know that was awesome. A lot of people hated that. But then you read, like, the Wolverine saga, and you're like, really? All these things happen to Wolverine? Yeah. Although he is in 17 titles a month, so I guess it's bound to be a storied history.
Yeah, when you're in the store trying to explain to people, oh, the history of a character, it sounds more ridiculous than any soap opera you've ever heard. But and they're like, no, it sounds dumb, but trust me, it's really good.
But if you can read one of these saga things and you don't actually have to read all these terrible comics, it's pretty good. Like you can get up to date on it without actually having to read it, and then just kind of read the stuff that's good now.
Yeah, you could also go to Wikipedia and get everything.
That's true.
That's definitely true. Well, they're both free, so it's not too much to complain about.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the news this week. Last week, we only had one sound effect. We're going to use that one over again. You guys ready for this? That's an old favorite.
Best ever.
The best sound effect ever. So in the first news, this is directly related to the podcast from last week. Witch Doctor number one sold out across the country. So
We did it.
That was our Planet Pickle last week. I think we can take credit for that. That's Witch Doctor, if you guys haven't read it. It's a book by Brandon Seifer and Lucas Kettner. It's basically like the TV show House, if House was an exorcist. And it's a lot of fun. Another book from Image that sold out right away, too, is Image Comics Super Dinosaur number 3, which I was worried was going to come out of the gate a little slow, but it seems like it's getting a little traction, which is good because it's a kid's book.
It seems to be selling more and more in each issue, which is great.
Yeah, I didn't realize at first that it was a kid's book, and now that I've been reading it more consistently, I'm actually liking it more and more as it goes.
Yeah, I mean, and it's good to have a book for to give to kids. I mean, Tiny Titans is great, and we sell a lot of that, but that's for like a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old.
Especially a kid's book that's not, you know, pandering or, like, there's complicated plots going on, but it's fun.
Right. Well, it's also like
complicated for Nick.
Yeah. I don't understand. Wait, this dinosaur is a robot? I don't know what's going on. What's happening?
Well, he's got a jetpack. My main thing with Super Dinosaur is I just want all the toys. I want Super Dinosaur with a jetpack. I want him with skis.
Yeah.
I want all that. So, so I think we can take full responsibility for that. Moving on to the next news item. Should I use the second sound effect or should I save it for later?
Save it.
All right, I'm going to save it. All right, here we go. So it seems like Marvel's doing a new thing where they're going to make short films for some of their characters. The first two focus on Agent Coulson, who showed up in Thor and Iron Man and some of the other movies, and they're going to be DVD extras.
No, are these live action?
Yeah, these are live action.
Yeah, they're kind of filming them like simultaneously with the movies. But initially, like a year ago, they had said that they were planning on making short films about some of their less known characters and throwing them in front of like the bigger movies, like Thor and Captain America, which didn't actually happen. But it's cool that they're kind of trying it out by making these little short films.
Yeah,
like,
wait,
to go along.
Yeah, I think I heard they're doing a Luke Cage short. I think because they're not sure to go forward with the full feature, so they're going to try a Luke Cage.
Yeah,
short.
There's a lot of rumors out there. I'm not sure which ones are solid, but hopefully they'll try it. I mean.
Well, and the thing with this is, I mean, Marvel Studios owns the film rights to 4,000 different characters.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, are there any characters that jump out at you guys that you think would make, like, a maybe not a good feature film, but would make a good short film?
Doctor Strange, number one right there.
But I think they're making a Doctor Strange feature film.
Yeah, I think
we'll see if that goes straight to DVD or not.
Yeah. Maybe more like Frogman or...
No. Good characters.
Well, wait, I could totally see a Frogman short.
Yeah.
Cloak and Dagger short would be awesome. That would be incredible.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the ones actually that we were originally talking about.
Really talking about. Yeah, and I think Luke Cage and Iron Fist, those are the kind of things that could do well in like a really action-packed short film where you don't really need to know a lot about the characters, but you can just set up an action scene. Kind of like, what were the DC short cartoons that they were doing packaged in with their animated DVDs?
Dr. Fate. Some other guys too.
They did Spectre and they did a Green Arrow one.
Those were actually better than all the movies that were attached to.
Yeah, I think so.
Actually,
too.
I have some news about that too. That they told us at the Retailer Summit that they're launching, DC's launching this kids block on Cartoon Network in the fall. And every episode or every week, there'll be new stuff, even if they don't have a new episode to put on, because there's like four different shows. They're going to do shorts. They're going to put shorts in there that are brand new. So
that's pretty cool. That's great. Is it going to be like, this sounds so nerdy. Is it going to be for like young kids, or is it going to be more like, you know, like Earth's Mightiest Heroes or Young Justice, where it can skew a little bit older?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I think, but DC's history is it starts off kind of young, and then quickly the storylines get more involved and more mature pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was definitely true in all this sort of Batman the Animated Series and all the things in that style, like the Superman cartoon and the Justice League cartoon.
Yeah, Teen Titans started off real kiddie and by the end got pretty dark at times, so that's cool.
Teen Titans Go is a very, very awesome show. Yeah, well, I think that could be good. I mean, the shorts with the animated stuff, too. I always, the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon, my favorite part is always the little short thing at the beginning because they go crazy and use characters like Commandy and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely, right. Definitely the freedom is where it's at.
So our third bit of news is a little bit less news, but basically the 2011 Harvey Award nominations were just announced. So the Harvey Awards are, you know, you got the Eisners up at the top, and then you got our Ignatz at SPX somewhere in the middle there, and between there is the Harvey Awards. They do it at Baltimore Comic Con every year. So I just wanted to go through some of these nominees and see what you guys thought. So best graphic novel, Duncan the Wonder Dog, which has been a pretty big book for us that we've had a lot of trouble keeping in stock. Market Day by James Sturm. Everything James Sturm does is great. He's a teacher up at Center for Cartoon Studies. Scott Pilgrim Volume 6, which I love Scott Pilgrim, but I really didn't like.
I'm not even sure it came out last year, did it?
I think it did. Yeah, it came out just before the movie. It was good, but it wasn't the best volume. So
yeah, I think that's true. Wilson by Dan Clowes, which was a great book, and X'd Out by Charles Burns, which is a whole pile of weird, but I love it. Do you guys have any picks out of those, like things that you think should win?
X'd Out, for sure.
Actually, Six Gun, you didn't mention that, but that's up, and I love that series.
I don't think it's under this category. It's somewhere in here.
Yeah, it's somewhere in here.
This one's just graphic. I think this is more like original graphic novels that are just, you know, one thing. Because Six Gun's more of a series.
Yeah, but I'd go with you on X'd Out. X'd Out, if you guys haven't read that, it's like this sort of fever dream graphic novel by Charles Burns that takes elements from Tintin and sort of has the same feel of his graphic novel as his graphic novel Black Hole, which is just,
It's messed up.
pure messed up insanity, but it's great stuff. So, yeah, and then best continuing series, which is, you know, your basic comics. You got Chew, Day Tripper, Echo, Fantastic Four, Lock and Key, and Love and Rockets. I've been loving Fantastic Four. Peter, I bet you don't even read Fantastic Four.
I don't care for it, honestly.
You don't like it? You read it and you're not, you're not doing
it? I read
it,
and I just not doing it for me.
You read Chew?
I do read Chew. Chew is so weird. It was freaked me out at first, but now I'm really digging it.
Yeah, I think out of these, Chew is probably the one that'll take this home. I mean, Chew was such a breakout book this past
Fantastic Four is so good.
Fantastic Four is really, really good.
It's really good.
Now, are you talking about the latest issues, the latest couple issues?
Yeah, but, well, I guess this is for Fantastic Four and not FF. But yeah, no, all the Jonathan Hickman stuff, I've been it's really out of
yeah, I didn't like his take on Fantastic Four at all, really.
You're a madman.
I know, really? I'm crazy. But,
I thought
yeah.
it was kind of a modern take, but then harken back to the Byrne and Kirby days. I think Hickman's run will go down in history.
Yeah, there's been good like long-term story building, and it's
good. Great. It's good, but
the character work is great, especially after the death of Johnny Storm. All that stuff has been pretty great.
See, like, they had me right up until the death of Johnny Storm, and then I thought, you know, it was good. I wasn't loving it, but it was really solid, and I really respected because he was telling a good story, his story. And then the death of Johnny Storm really soured me on the whole thing.
Did you read the issue after that? That was the silent issue about everybody dealing with it?
I did, and
no,
I thought it was schmaltzy, and I didn't buy it at all.
Oh, it was schmaltzy, but I loved it.
You're heartless.
I am a little heartless, and I'm old, so I've been doing this a long time.
So here you go, Peter. Here's where Six Gun pops up. Best writer, Cullen Bunn for Six Gun. Joshua Fiakov. Oh, that's cool that he was nominated for Echoes, which was a book that we all really liked
Echoes
over at the
awesome.
Vienna store. Roger Langridge for Thor the Mighty Avenger.
Which is one of the best.
Yeah, which maybe shouldn't have gotten canceled, but it didn't sell. It's unfortunate. Ryan Somer for Gutters and Mark Wade for Irredeemable, which has gone in a really weird direction recently, but I still really like that book.
I like it too, but it's not as good now as it was when it first started. I mean, the first 12 issues were just amazing. They just blew the doors off.
Spoiler alert, it's about to get amazing.
Is it about to get amazing? Because, well, basically, if people haven't read Irredeemable, it's a book by Mark Waid about this character called the Plutonian, who is like Superman, but he's had enough and he turns on the world. And it started out really great. It was basically about their analog to the Justice League trying to hunt him down and figure out how to kill him. And then he got
in the
sick.
First issue, he massacred tons of people, and the massacre kept happening, and the Justice League or their equivalent had no way to stop it.
Yeah, didn't he sink the Philippines? And then but then the last 10 or so issues have just been this character, the Plutonian, in some weird insane asylum in space where aliens like kind of molest him and stuff.
But there's been cool stuff during that too, because they show how the people that are left behind are trying to like rebuild the Earth and try to fix things. But it's about to get pretty crazy.
So as much as I like a lot of these books, I got to give it to Six Gun on this one. I know you're a big fan of that book.
Yeah, it's just I'm not a huge fan of horror westerns, but I'm loving this book. I mean, it's so different and it's so good that you got to love something that's different.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
And the artist for Six Gun is nominated too. The best artist is this is a tough one to choose from. You got Darwin Cook for Parker, Dean Haspiel for Cuba My Revolution, Brian Hurt for Six Gun. Ed Rizowski for Gutters and Chris Samnee for Thor the Mighty Avenger. And I mean,
ooh,
those are
God.
All. Yeah.
Chris Samnee.
Yeah, Chris Samnee is amazing. But I don't know. I got to go with Darwin Cook on that one. I think I always go with Darwin Cook.
Yeah, Parker is incredible.
It's tough. It's a tough call. I mean, it's great stuff, and I love Darwin Cook, but I don't know. I mean, he's won before, you know. It's not
give it
to
somebody
stuff.
Else. Why not?
Yeah, I support, you know, new guys who come in and really make an impression.
No, I mean, there's something to be said about the fact that Six Gun has been on time, at least. Like, it's a new book that actually comes out every month, as opposed to most new books.
So that's it for news for this week. We're going to go into the viewer mail here, which means it's time to use my second sound effect. You guys might recognize that one. So if you guys remember last week, Jessica was our first viewer mail that we had. Or I keep saying viewer mail. I mean, I guess it's listener mail. I'm going to stick with viewer
first,
mail.
First, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth.
Well, yeah, that's what's happening here this week. Jessica sent us 8 emails this week. So let's try to go through these really quick. All right, the first one is, hello again, Big Planet Comics Podcast. Long-time listener, second-time emailer. That's not creepy. So here goes. Have you ever cried at a comic? If so, what comic and why? Just curious. Let's go around the table. Peter?
I don't know that I've ever cried, but Watchmen moved me beyond words.
Nick?
I cried when I heard that Scott Lobdell is writing a bunch of comics coming in the future.
That is our weekly jab at Scott Lobdell. He deserves it. I don't think I've ever cried at a comic. I only cry when I watch like crappy reality shows. I cry when I watch American Idol.
Yeah, all right. Anytime I watch what is it, Extreme Makeover Home Edition? That gets me every time.
I only cry when I watch Extreme Makeover Fat People Edition.
That's not what it's called.
Yeah, sure it is. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. All right, so the second question. We got a bunch of these, so let's go through these. Big Planet Comics Podcast, another question, if you can believe it. During your workday at Big Planet Comics, do you ever get judgy about what comics certain people buy? The people need to know how to not look foolish.
We always get judgy, but we like to keep it to ourselves.
I think that's a good answer. I think that's how we all feel about that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, usually I'd be like, oh, well, I didn't like it, but people seem to like it.
Yeah. I think that's
instead of being like, this is awful, stop buying it.
All right, so third question. Hi again, Big Planet Comics. I was reflecting upon my own life and began to wonder, what was the first comic you ever remember reading?
Getting creeped out by this.
When I was 5, my mom started buying me comics. They're the big DC 70s Treasury ones. So, you know, Neil Adams Batman in the Treasury format or Legion of Superheroes blew my mind.
Those are definitely good starters.
Probably the first ones I read were the ones in the back of my dad's Playboys. But then after that, I guess I evolved to more, I think Spider-Man was the first thing I really got into.
I may have bought things before this, but the first one I really remember was I read, basically when I was a kid, all I read was Spider-Man and I read What If. So I think the first comic I read was like What If Molten Man Killed Spider-Man, and I didn't really quite understand the concept. So I was like,
why?
Yeah, I'm like, Spider-Man's dead. What's going on? And the next issue, it would be like, what? Wolverine's the Phoenix? What is all this crazy stuff?
There's no continuity in this at all.
All right, so we're going to keep moving on. Jessica says, oh, it's me again. A question for us ladies. Who is the best female role model in all of the comic sphere? Girl power.
Well, we're all guys, so I don't know how we could possibly answer that.
All right, so that's Peter's answer.
I'm going to go with Gail Simone, I guess.
Well, I don't think Gail Simone is. Oh, I guess she's in the comic sphere.
Yeah, of course she is.
My favorite female artist right now is Amanda Connor. I think she's amazing.
Yeah, Amanda Connor is pretty amazing. But what about characters in comics? Do you think there are any really strong female role models?
A lot of women identify with Catwoman, and I don't know that that's good or bad. I'm just not sure about that.
I'm going to go with the Pro.
The Pro? Yeah, she's a great role model.
If you guys don't know what the Pro is, just look it up. I'm not going to talk about it on this podcast. Okay, here we go. Question number 5. We're getting right through these. Oh, dear. Not to be a curious cat, but I have another question. Let's say that you are a time-traveling spaceman, and in your journeys through the past, you very accidentally made comics never happen. How would this change the future? This is probably in the tip-top of all your listeners' brains.
Well, I got to say that, you know, comics were the main form of entertainment for kids and young adults for like 40 years in this country. So it sure would make this country really, really boring.
Speaking as a time traveler myself, I would never do this because I feel it's completely unethical.
I think the Great Depression would still be happening. All right. Let's see. Yes. Question 6. Hello there. I just thought of another question I wanted to ask. Of the titles you plan to discuss on today's podcast, which one best reflects your overall worldview? Part 2, which one best reflects your current state of mind?
That's a really dangerous question.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. We're going to talk about these later, so we're not going to answer that question.
I'm just going to say that I went back in time, and then I went back to the future, and it'll work out. It'll be fun.
Speaking of Back to the Future, I just watched Back to the Future Part 3 for the first time.
Finally.
Yeah, I know, finally. It's in the Old West.
It's got a time-traveling train in it, all right?
And Biff, it's because they always have Biff. All right, let's move on to the next one. Question 7. Hi again, Big Planet Comics Podcast. Me again. Hope you guys don't think I'm creepy. Ha, 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 ha.
How many ha's?
It's a bunch of ha's. It's enough that it's creepy.
Are they in caps?
They are in caps.
Oh, Lord.
So if I were an animal, I would want to be an otter. Are there any good comics about otters? Just curious. This one should be pretty easy. Peter?
I don't believe there are.
That is the correct answer. All right. So after those, I Jessica was sending a lot of questions in, so I just wanted to reply. I said, hello, Jessica. Thank you for your questions. Although I was initially concerned for my own well-being after reading these messages, I have spoken with the police, and they have assured me that no laws have been broken. So keep sending in those questions. If anything, they can be used as evidence in the future. Thanks again, Big Planet Comics Podcast. And then Jessica sent in one more email, and it says, thanks for being my best friends. So if you guys have questions, and I mean all of you guys besides Jessica, send them into podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, and we'll read them on the air.
Yeah, and Jessica, don't stop sending them.
So that's viewer mail. What would happen if I played these two sound effects at the same time? I guess you could mostly just hear the first one.
Yeah, Batman's more powerful.
All right, so we're going to go into reviews. Let's start out right off with Cap and Thor Avengers, which are the two prequel comics to the Captain America and Thor movies. What'd you guys think of these?
I thought they were pretty good. The Cap one's not really a prequel. I guess it kind of takes place somewhere in between the movie and the beginning of the movie and the middle of the movie.
Sorry, I should point out that this was written by Fred Van Lente, and the art was by Ron Lim, who's a guy I remember from when I was a kid. I think he used to draw Namor and Silver Surfer, maybe.
Yeah.
Did you read this one, Peter? What'd you think?
I did, and I liked it a lot. It's more simple, but it was really good. And I said, after reading, I'm like, I wish more Cap books were like this.
Well, and you were saying before we started the podcast, you're like, well, what do you give to a kid that comes in or somebody that comes in that wants a $3 book because they're interested in Captain America? I think this is probably the answer to that question. I
mean, definitely. It was a fun read, and it would be great for kids. I mean, it's all you can ask for a comic.
Yeah, it makes me a little more optimistic about the Captain America movie.
Yeah, I'm really optimistic about it. I don't know why. It's probably not.
Well, every trailer I've seen has made me more hopeful every time, so it's just been better and better. I'm actually hoping it's the best superhero movie of the summer. I don't know if that'll be true, but that's what I'm hoping for.
I tend to follow directors, and Joe Johnson's last movie was The Wolfman.
Ooh.
So, yeah. All right, so let's move right on. We got a big one here. Fear Itself, number 4, written by Matt Fraction with art by Stuart Immonen. Fear Itself has been trucking along, and I don't know. What did you think?
It's at the halfway point now, I guess, right?
Yeah, it was a little more of the same, but I don't know. What did you guys think?
Listen, I like Fear Itself. It's been pretty good. I don't understand the plot at all. I don't think it really makes a lot of sense, but I don't think it needs to. It's just a fun book to read. It's just an excuse for violence.
Yeah, there's a lot of good character moments in this issue. Dealing with the fallout from last issue with Captain America and Steve Rogers trying to deal with that and thinking if he's ready or not, and then Thor dealing with his, being cast out of Asgard to try to get help. And then Tony Stark has an amazing moment where he's reaching out for help and something incredible happens that he sacrifices. It's pretty interesting.
You say amazing. I would use a different adjective to describe it.
Would you? You didn't like that. I don't want to give away what happened, but it was a big character thing for Tony Stark, but
it was, but it seemed maybe a little forced or a little, I don't know what. But overall, I liked the issue a lot. I didn't necessarily love that scene totally, though.
Yeah, I liked it. I feel like Fear Itself might be getting overshadowed by Flashpoint right now, because Flashpoint is obviously this big universe-changing thing that's happening. And Fear Itself is kind of just like a big, fun action comic that spotlights smartly Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America.
Yeah, for sure.
The main series has been a lot of fun, and a lot of the minis have been a lot of fun. Especially, I know, Peter, I'm making a little segue here. I always like to give those away when I do them. is Fear Itself Uncanny X-Force number 1 by Rob Williams and Simone Bianchi. When we were trying to figure out what our pick of the week was, this was the first thing Peter said. So what did you like about this book?
You know, I can't really describe what I like about it, except that it was fun. It really felt like it got to the heart of what the X-Men are about and what's good about the X-Men. And it was just a really compelling read, even though it wasn't, super original. I just, for whatever reason, personally, I really, really enjoyed it.
Wait, are we talking about, sorry, is this the X-Force or X-Men book you're talking about?
I was talking about X-Men.
Oh, okay. I was talking about X-Force. So the one you really liked was X-Men?
Was X-Men.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, that's the one I was talking about.
The one with Juggernaut?
Yeah.
It didn't have Simon Bianchi art, though.
No, it didn't. The X-Men one was by Kieran Gillen and Greg Land. And that's the one that deals with Juggernaut getting the hammer in the...
Yeah, actually, I thought that had more to do with the plot of Fear Itself than Fear Itself did. That really, honestly, that the bit with Juggernaut, I thought really advanced the plot of what Fear Itself was really about.
One of the funny things this week is that I also, did you read Thunderbolts? Because that also had a big fight with Juggernaut in it in two different places. So I'm not sure where they fit in together.
Well, one happened first and then the other one happened second.
Yeah, I think that basically explains it. yeah, well, the interesting thing about Fear Itself, maybe that's not the interesting thing about it, but is that, yeah, a lot of the stuff that feels big has been happening in the side stories. Like the characters that have been getting these hammers that are falling from the sky, that all those big fights seem to happen.
Yeah, like all the Grey Gargoyle stuff seems to be taking place in Iron Man, where he like basically kills everyone in Paris.
Yeah, which seems kind of like a big deal, especially if you live in Paris.
All right.
Marvel Paris.
Yeah. Marvel Paris, yeah.
So there were a couple other Fear Itself books this week. Uncanny X-Force number 1 and Wolverine number 1. Uncanny X-Force by the aforementioned Rob Williams and Simone Bianchi. And Fear Itself Wolverine was by Sam Peck and Roland Boschke. I thought both of these were fun comics, but they weren't anything really exciting going on.
I like the Wolverine comic, but I'm getting a little tired of Wolverine just running around and killing everyone.
Although Wolverine had an amazing moment in this issue. It's not really a spoiler because it happens very early, but he takes somebody's mask and shoves a tear gas grenade into it, which is pretty great.
Oh, yeah, it's Scarecrow, right? What I was totally confused by that because I didn't realize that there was a Marvel version of Scarecrow who looks exactly like Scarecrow.
Yep. Actually, he looks exactly like the Scarecrow from the Christopher Nolan movies.
So moving on, we got some Flashpoint books as well. The second issues of some of these Flashpoint miniseries. I don't know what to say about these. Flashpoint, Abinsur, the Green Lantern number 2 by Adam Schlagman and Philippe Massafera. The weird thing about the Abinsur book is it seems to be slightly at odds with what's going on in the Hal Jordan book, or that they're kind of covering the same territory, which is Abinsur landing on Earth and then
going very badly.
Yeah,
very
basically.
The Hal Jordan book ended with him finding Abinsur and being like, "Hey, I'm Hal Jordan." And this one in the middle of it, he's like, "I'm Hal Jordan." And then he's in the background the rest of the issue.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the Flashpoint universe isn't that big. You know, there are these very certain stories that are going on, and so they're being covered well in various comics.
But there were some kind of plot points in Abinsur for the rest of Flashpoint, I thought they touched on a little bit.
And Flashpoint Batman Night of Vengeance, which was insane.
Yes.
It's really hard to talk about this book without talking about all the big crazy thing that happened in it. But I guess the main thing that seems to be going on in these Flashpoint books is that people either get decapitated or get their arms ripped off or get killed on the last page of every book.
Throat slashed.
There's a lot more blood in these Flashpoint books than there are in any DC Universe book ever before.
It's true. I feel like I'm reading Invincible or Walking Dead or something. And the same is true of Flashpoint Secret 7 number 2 by Peter Milligan and Fernando Blanco. There's like a crazy murder at the end of it. I don't know. Do you feel like DC is kind of getting all this out of their system now and the new books are not going to be as sort of gritty as their big event books are? Or do you guys feel like this is kind of the direction that they're moving in?
I hope this isn't the direction they're moving in.
I definitely think for some of the books, they're moving in this direction. It's not going to be all of their books and it's not going to be Superman and Batman, but some of the books they're promoting is darker. This is definitely where they're
going with Justice League Dark.
And some of the, Resurrection Man and some of the other stuff, they're definitely going that way.
Yeah, Resurrection Man looks pretty...
interesting.
Well, yeah. It's about a guy who dies and gets new powers every time he comes back to life. So he's constantly dying in every issue.
So that's the Flashpoint books. Let's move on to the Kick-Ass trade. I think everybody read Kick-Ass, right?
Go ahead. Tell me what you guys think of it.
Never heard of it.
Well, I'll say what I have to say. Go ahead.
Are you not a fan of Kick-Ass?
You know, I absolutely hated this book.
Are you a Mark Miller hater?
No. I've liked some of his stuff. Like, I wanted to hate Wanted, but because I thought it was vile, but he won me over. It really, really won me over. And this book didn't win me over at all. I just thought it was really rough and really raw and not good at all. I didn't like it at all.
I think that's fair that it's rough and raw, but I think that kind of emphasizes what it's about, like how things aren't as clean cut, if you had a superhero basically in our universe.
But I wound up hating everybody in it. If you hate everybody in it, I mean, the only cool part of the whole book, I thought, was when Hit Girl would decapitate people. That was the only thing I found redeeming about the book at all. Otherwise, I didn't like it at all.
Well, I feel like people go different ways on that. Like, I don't necessarily feel like I have to like a character to like a book. Like, I love Arrested Development, and I hate everybody on that show. But I find pretty much everybody in Kick-Ass is despicable.
At times, it feels a little bit like an indictment against fans because, like, first of all, like, all the people that are fans of comics in this are like sleaze bags. Like Kick-Ass is like a sleaze bag. Hit-Girl's dad is like a sleaze bag.
But everybody in this book is a sleaze bag.
But at the same time, it celebrates the stuff that the comics does that's great. You know, like,
does it celebrate it or stick it in your face and tell you you're stupid for liking it?
No,
not sure that it's celebrating.
It kind of does both. I think it's a little bit like, hey, we like this stuff that's kind of stupid, but, we like it, and here it is. Here's what we like,
Probably if you guys haven't read Kick-Ass at this point, you're not going to. But, I mean, just even listening to us talk about it, there's obviously a lot going on in the book that you're either going to love or you're going to hate. But it's kind of a big book, and it's definitely worth checking out. Well, at least I say it's definitely worth checking out. I assume
Nick
does.
Sure, yeah.
And Peter says, don't even read it?
You know, if you like really hardcore violent stuff, you might love it. I didn't. That's just my view.
There we go. All right. Oh, speaking of hardcore violent, I don't know if you guys read this book. You know, every week we've got a book that it's like you try to be nice about everything, and then a book like Mysterious Ways number one comes along. This is written by Jason Rubin with art by Tyler Kirkham. I mean, I was reading this thing. It's basically the most vile sort of mean-spirited, no humor, ugly art.
No, I'll disagree with you. It's vile, and whenever you open a comic with a torture scene, that's a pretty strong opening. But then they start playing with your perception of reality right away, which gives it a little bit more interesting than just, you know, what I thought it was going to be at first.
Yeah, I mean, it's more interesting than I thought what I thought it was going to be, but it was I still didn't find it too terribly interesting.
It didn't make any sense, any of it.
Well, I think that's kind of the point. Like, there's this big thing in the back of the book. It's like, if you can figure out what this book is about, we'll give you free Top Cow comics for a year, which I don't know if that's really a prize. But
yeah. I always like to give something a second issue. You know, you write the first page, first two pages, I'm like, oh, I'm going to hate this book. In the end, I'm like, you know, I'm willing to check out issue number two. It's something worth, you know.
I fought to finish it. I don't know if I could read a second issue.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same way about that. I don't like that. The art styles, the guy Tyler Kirkham, he's been doing Top Cow stuff for a while. I think he did some DC books for a little while too. But he's got a very Mark Silvestri, Greg Capullo, you know, it's that Top Cow style. I've never been a fan of like Darkness or Witchblade.
The art's not the best, but you know, I still feel like it's worth giving issue two a chance.
I felt like I was reading a pilot season book that definitely wouldn't have.
I felt like I was reading a pilot season book, but I was only reading every, like, eighth page. Because, well, like, it would switch from scenes, and I had no idea how this happened. Like, there's this part where the main character is, like, about to get arrested. He fights a bunch of cops. And the next scene is him, like, laying in bed, like, talking to somebody on the phone.
So there you go. You see, there's a book for each of us to hate each week.
It's true.
Well, hopefully the next book all of us liked, which was Red Skull Incarnate. I actually thought it was really good. This is by Greg Pak and Mirko Kolak. It's kind of a spiritual successor to Magneto Testament, which was a book that came out a few years ago that was about Magneto when he was a kid growing up in during World War II and being in a concentration camp. And this book focuses on Red Skull when he was a child in the 20s, sort of at the beginning of you know, the rise of the Nazi Party. And
yeah, this is like 20 years earlier.
Yeah, the book was well done, well executed, but I had a philosophical problem with it.
Oh, that's interesting. What
was that? You know, basically, anytime you make, you know, main members of the Nazi Party or the Marvel Nazi Party seem sympathetic or understand where they came from so you can get, you know, they're not so different from you and I really have a problem with making Nazis seem more sympathetic.
And you mean you're talking about the Red Skull in particular?
Yeah, I mean, well, he had a hard childhood, so you can understand why he became a psychopath.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, for me at least, it's like, well, he had a hard childhood in this book. That's what it's about. But it's not. I don't know if they're using that as an excuse as much as, you know, I mean, people who become psychopaths have hard childhoods sometimes.
Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're just born that way. And I don't think.
I mean, if you're doing a Red Skull series about him as a kid, you're not going to have him be like, you know, living in a rich part of town and like. You know,
and murdering
eating caviar.
I think you really could. I mean, I had a more of a philosophical problem with this book. We'll see how it goes with issue two. But
well, it's also supposed to be kind of an analog for Captain America, too. Like, he's just, you know, a regular kid that had a hard life and he's trying to be the best he can be, except he's trying the best he can be in like a Nazi kind of way instead of like an American way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at the beginning of the book, they definitely do paint a sort of sympathetic picture. But by the end, nobody is feeling sympathy for the Red Skull.
No.
Yeah, but I don't know. I still.
It's too early, too, to know. Like, I mean, it could get a lot worse.
Yeah, I'm definitely want to check out issue two. I'm real curious about issue two and see how they go with it.
It's definitely well researched, that's for sure. There's a lot of information in this. And if you read the back, he talks about how he wants to get it as right as he can. And he's been researching everything.
And that was true of Magneto Testament as well. You do run into that sort of, you know, it's almost like the Star Wars prequels. It's like, do you really want to watch the story about this kid that becomes an evil person and kills a bunch of people? I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. But I thought the first issue of this was interesting enough for me, and I'm going to come back and read it again.
Me too, and I like the art too. I thought the art was
pretty good.
Next up is the Rod Racer one-shot. I loved this, and... you know, the story is kind of not there so much. It's a very simple, like, revenge racing thing. But the thing that saves it for me is Toby Cypress's art is like somewhere in between Alex Toth and Paul Pope, and it's got so much life and it's so dynamic. I just love to look at this book.
I completely disagree with you.
So is this just not your style of art?
You know, honestly, I thought the start was okay, and the story was okay, and the art was okay, but he doesn't know how to frame a shot. He had this great story that he could really have framed differently. He used too many of the same panels on too many of the pages, and he wasn't doing a good job with his graphic storytelling skills. It's very hard to do, and I didn't think he was really capturing what this could have been. There could have been a lot more, you know, explosive pages, different camera angles. I didn't think he varied it up enough. It was too, the frames were all the same, I thought.
I think a little bit of the point of this was, like, if you saw, like, every, like, other page, it was, like, a song title would pop up with the name of the band. And I think it was just kind of more of, like, a
say it. Say tone poem.
A tone poem. There you go.
Gross.
A tone poem.
I think I'm very biased just because I was almost looking at it more of as like an art book, but I think you're right, Peter. Like, it wasn't, you don't get a sense of speed in the races, which is like a big important thing if you're going to do a
or space. I thought all the shots were too tight and there were like wide open, you know, alleyways, two cars come racing down and right at you. I mean, that would have been great. And he didn't take advantage of that.
Yeah. The storytelling definitely is not the strong point, but, I mean, if you're just an art fan, I think Toby Cypress has a really strong line that's got a great flow to it.
I agree with everything you say. Yeah. The story is just kind of there, but it doesn't matter because I just want to look at it.
But yeah, so definitely at least flip through Rod Racer. It's if you like the art, it's worth buying because you'll probably look at it a bunch of times. moving on to another trade paperback this week, The Scarlet Hardcover by Brian Bendis and Alex Maleev. This is a book that I'm enjoying the storyline a lot in this book, but I am not a fan of this like photo reference, photoshoppy art by Alex Maleev. It gives it a kind of cinematic quality, but I feel like at the same time it's so static it just doesn't work for me. What did you?
Yeah, it's a little too much. That everybody kind of looks like a little too much like a photograph. Like the poses are really weird. Like it looks like a photograph. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't look like there's no fluid motion to anything. But that being said, it's awesome. The story is great. And
yeah, the basic story is like Scarlett is this young girl and her boyfriend is killed by the police and she decides that she's had enough and that she's gonna, you know, she's gonna rise
start a revolution.
Yeah, and start a revolution. And this is about sort of the revolution gelling together and her becoming a figurehead for it. And I think the storyline is really interesting.
I think it's one of the more interesting books that are being done, but I have to agree that, you know, Alex Maleev 5 or 6 years ago was more interesting than he is now. He's become too reliant on Photoshop and photography, I think.
I think that's definitely true. It's
except for Moon Knight.
Yeah, except for Moon Knight, which is that actually came out this week. We don't have it on our list of stuff to talk about, but Alex Maleev's art in Scarlet in comparison to Moon Knight is like not
it's completely different.
Yeah, it's like night and day.
You can tell Moon Knight he's actually just drawing this.
Yeah, he's drawing. I mean, I think he's using he's a little bit of photo reference, but it's so much more action oriented, and I think it works a lot better.
There's hope for him yet.
Yeah, yeah,
it's true. Well, look what happened with Tony Harris. Tony Harris, when he started on Ex Machina, was so obvious that he was using photographs for everything, and as the series went on, things became more cartoony, and everything became a little more elastic, and it really did it. The book a service.
Yeah, I mean, the artists learn, you know, as they go along.
Yeah, but Alex Maleev has been around for a long time.
It's true. It's true.
Well, hopefully he's trying some different stuff. That would be great.
Yeah. And I definitely do like his work in Moon Knight. But just for story alone, I think Scarlet's worth checking out.
For sure.
Now, I didn't actually read this next book, but this is a favorite of Nick's. I'm still reading the first series, but this is Screamland Series 2, Number 2. This is written by Harold Seip and Christopher Sabella with art by Lee Leslie. Just tell people what Screamland's about.
Well, the original Screamland was a 5 or 6 issue miniseries about basically it takes place in a world where all of the universal monsters like Dracula and Frankenstein and all that, they're real monsters. And these movies were made, you know, they were like, oh, let's make a movie about this crazy monster. And the first series takes place, they're getting older and, you know, Hollywood's moved on, they moved on to CGI and stuff like that. And they don't need any of the old Hollywood monsters. And, this current storyline, though, is a little different.
I should point out, in the first storyline, everybody's getting older except for Dracula because he's immortal. So all the other monsters hate him.
Yeah, they hate him because he's like, he's kind of into like the hip like vampire stuff that's going on.
Yeah, he's
stuff.
Sparkly.
Yeah. But then in the current series is about it's pretty insane. There's basically when the monsters were kind of nearing their end of the height of their fame, they were they decided to film some crazy orgy that they were gonna do, and the Invisible Man.
Did you say orgy or origin?
Orgy.
Okay.
Crazy monster orgy, and the Invisible Man has threatened to release the footage at this Comic-Con type convention that's going on, and I don't know if you haven't read the first issue, it might spoil a little bit, but this is the second issue. So anyway, at the end of the first issue, Invisible Man's found dead, and two of the main characters in this are basically a Wolfman, the Blob, who's like the mass in this one, and a slasher analog who's called like the Midnight Slasher, and a Captain Kirk type guy who's like an older William Shatner who was in a bunch of terrible TV shows back in the day. And he's like, I can solve this murder. I was on a detective show. And then, you know, Wolfman makes fun of him because his detective show was awful. It's like TJ Hooker, sort of, you know. And then so it's them kind of trying to solve this murder. One's studying the history of the mass and trying to follow him around. And the other one's trying to figure out if the slasher guy is funny. Because the slasher guy is like basically Jason Voorhees, but there was a thing released in the media that showed him with his family and just like grilling and stuff and just hanging out with his family, having a barbecue.
So it sounds like it's kind of, you know, film monsters in the TMZ era where everything you do is made public.
Yeah. It's really funny. It's one of the funniest books I read in a while.
Yeah. Definitely the first series was very funny. So I'm glad to hear that the second one's still keeping that
sounds
up.
Good. I haven't read them, but I definitely want to know.
It's pretty awesome.
That's good. That's what we're supposed to do on this podcast, even if we just make Peter read this book.
Nobody read the first Screamland. I was shocked that there was a second series, but I'm excited.
All right. Next up, we've got Sidekicks, which is a new graphic novel by Dan Santat. And this is a kid's book focusing on the pets of a superhero who basically have superpowers themselves and want to prove that they can be the sidekicks to this guy. I can't remember his name. I think it's Captain Amazing is the guy.
Yeah, Captain Amazing. Yeah.
And so it follows the adventures of this. It's a hamster, a cat, a dog, and a chameleon. And it's just a fun book for kids. I mean, it's like
it feels exactly like a Pixar movie. Like it feels like a little bit of like The Incredibles, but with animals. You know, that's a little like too simple, but it feels like a Pixar movie.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. Yeah, it definitely feels like a Pixar movie in that it focuses just as heavily on action as it does on like a family dynamic and character development and things like that. And it's a great book for adults, but it's especially, I mean, if you have like an 8 to 11 year old kid, it's such a fun read.
I thought the art was pretty fun too. The art's worth flipping through.
The art is incredible. Yeah, it's really good.
It's very obvious that this guy is a guy that works in animation. I mean, it's very fluid and like his storytelling is impeccable. I mean, it flows so well and, the Sidekicks graphic novel. It's definitely worth checking out. Vengeance number one is our next book. I can tell by the look on Peter's face that he didn't like this one. I thought it was fun, but I'll let Peter go ahead, Peter.
Actually, I did like it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I loved it.
It was awesome.
I wanted to hate it because I thought it was a really dumb idea, but actually by the end of it, I'm like, I'm really digging this. I'm a little embarrassed that I'm digging it so much, but I was digging it.
Well, before I read it, I read an interview with Joe Casey and he was like, like they were asking him, what's this about? And he's like, well, I told Marvel I wanted to do a big, huge event book, but with no marketing, no tie-ins, and basically let me do whatever I want. And he's like, I want to use, you know, characters that pretty much nobody uses and kind of explore the underbelly of the Marvel Universe while still including all of the huge characters. Like Magneto is one of the main characters in the first issue, and it's pretty awesome.
And it definitely feels that way. I mean, it feels this book, a 6-issue miniseries? It definitely feels like the beginnings of something that's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger as it goes along. The art by Nick Dragotta, who used to basically be Mike Allred, who did Madman. Nick Dragotta was basically a Mike Allred impersonator.
But he's
really blossomed into his this own looks nothing artist like that. Now. Yeah. And yeah, the art is really... I don't even know how to describe it. It's cartoony, but it's very grounded at the same time. And he does a really good job of rendering all the characters in a way that makes them seem really unique. And I don't know, he's good with expressions. And
it's fun. He does a good job with the art. You really convey the emotion through the artwork, and it's fluid and clean at the same time. So it was cool. I was impressed with the art, actually.
And a lot of these characters who I don't know a lot about, like Miss America Chavez and yeah. I guess Angel and Beak, who are both from the Grant Morrison run on X-Men.
Yeah, it's weird that Beak – I'm a giant nerd, so I'm probably the only one that knew it was Beak. Because he's like in human form, and they just say his name, and I was like, "Oh, that's Beak, and this is Angel."
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about Beak before this, but I was interested in what was going to happen to him by the time I got to the end of it, and that's what a comic is supposed to do. And yeah, I think it's cool. I'm glad all of us really like
this. This is a perfect comic for anybody who is tired of, you know, Fear Itself and Flashpoint with all its tie-ins and huge things. Like, even if you like those, you'll still like this. But this is kind of the book where you can read it and not worry about missing a single thing.
I think that's definitely true.
Yeah, if you know anything about the Marvel Universe, you don't need to know that much.
Nothing.
And just it's worth just starting to just give it a try because it is fun.
Yeah. So everybody, yeah, check out Vengeance if you're into superhero stuff. I definitely get the sense that by the end of this, people are going to be pretty excited about this book. From there, we're going to move on to our planet pick of the week, which is Flashpoint number 3. I know that's probably going to be a big surprise. I don't
that
know.
That was a surprise.
Yeah, that was a surprise. Surprise. But, you know, we've trashed a lot of these Flashpoint books. Flashpoint number 2 had that crazy ending where basically at the end of Flashpoint number 2, Barry Allen decides that if he wants to turn back into the Flash, so he gets Batman to pour chemicals all over him and then electrocute him.
Yeah, he's like sits in an electric chair. He's like, I'm going to get hit by lightning. Here we go.
Yeah, and everybody thought that was a really bad idea. And Batman seemed really into it, though.
And then he got fried.
And then he got fried, and he's like in bandages at the beginning of this book.
Which was the best surprise ending of a comic I've read. I was absolutely shocked by the ending.
It was so ridiculous.
Blown away by it. Loved it. And I loved issue 3 even more. I'm like,
this issue was amazing, yeah.
The first issue of Flashpoint, number 1, I was kind of disappointed. But 2 sold me, and 3 sold me even more.
The funny thing about Flashpoint right now is I don't know if it's good, but I love it. It's like, it's so over the top and I'm really enjoying reading it. So it's, you know, it doesn't matter. Like sometimes I feel like I'm laughing at it.
Yeah. Like the ridiculous thing with the Flash is like, oh, pour chemicals on me with lightning. You're kind of like, that's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And then there are a bunch of moments like that in this issue. And one thing that I think is really interesting is the way that they handle Superman. I mean, I'm not going to give anything away about it. But the way they handle the Project Superman thing that they started in the
miniseries,
it's a great
reveal, yeah.
And the way that they're handling Superman in this has really got me hooked into this book. One thing is there are only, what, 2 issues left? There's a lot of stuff to tie up.
That's what
issues.
I'm worried about. Is like this book is supposed to launch the entire, you know, DC universe from here on. And I'm not sure like how it's going to happen in 2 weeks or 2 issues. I mean,
well, it just wraps up the Flashpoint stuff. It doesn't have anything to do with really or too much to do with what's going on in September.
Are you sure? Yeah. I'm pretty sure that the last issue of Flashpoint is going to be like, here's all these worlds merging and here's the new universe.
And it's not going to be that.
No?
Some of the elements may carry over, but it's not going to be straight line. Definitely not.
Well, I don't mean that Flashpoint will be this universe, but you don't think that that by changing the universe in Flashpoint, that's going to sort of create this new DC, this new 52.
That's their excuse they're using to restart things, but it's really, they're 2 separate things almost. They really are separate.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's true of a lot of the big DC events though. It's like, you know, the miniseries doesn't have a lot to do with the stuff that's going to come after it, but it's definitely used as sort of an excuse to change continuity because they love to change continuity.
Yeah, but see, DC said that this is the book for the fans, their long-term fans, they're kind of worried about the new universe. It kind of ties it into the longer continuity later on.
You know, I don't think so because they're not actually taking away all the continuity from the old stuff. They're only choosing the best stuff from the last 60 years.
Yeah, but I think this is the thing to explain why they choose certain things.
Well, yeah, it's the crutch they're using to do what they want to do.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, Aquaman and Wonder Woman are not going to be anything like they are in
Flashpoint. No. Oh, yeah, no, that's not what I mean. Like, what I think is that basically what happens in Flashpoint is going to be the Flashpoint that creates this new universe.
Yeah, it's Barry Allen returning to the regular DC universe. Only when he returns, it's not exactly the same.
Because if you change one universe, you change all universes.
Exactly, and I'm just like not sure how quickly that's going to happen in the next 2 issues, but we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, I do feel like there's
a lot of
stuff to
tie up. I like it, though. It's awesome.
Yeah, but I do love the series. And that's our last book of the week.
Yeah.
And that was our pick. If you guys were not sure about Flashpoint up until this point, you don't have to buy all the miniseries and stuff, but definitely check out the main series. It's a fun Flash story. There's some crazy stuff happening. And
this and Batman, that's it.
And check out the Jonah Hex book this week. That was great.
Yeah, we went back and forth about talking about that. But yeah, the Jonah Hex book had art by Jeff Lemire, who works on Sweet Tooth and has been writing Superboy and did the Essex County books. And it's definitely worth checking
out. Also, I hate to interrupt the flow, but there's one last breaking news that I just saw online.
Oh, yeah. Nick saw a news story today.
Eric Larson is bringing back Osama bin Laden in Savage Dragon as a mutated Savage Dragon clone. I have no idea what's happening, but the cover is basically Savage Dragon with it looking like Osama bin Laden, and I have no idea, but it sounds like it's going to be in the news a lot.
So we're going to leave you guys with that bombshell.
To be continued.
To be continued. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.
Later, guys.